We're holding on to Zion Amud Beis by the Mishnah at the bottom, three lines from the bottom. We learned in the first Mishnah of this parak that there were a bunch of 13s in the Beis Hamikdash. There were 13 shofros, 13 pushkas, which we're going to discuss those. We're going to discuss those tomorrow. Beis Hashem. Two of them were for Machzor Shekel, which is what that's doing in this Masechta. But then we also had there were 13 gates in the Beis Hamikdash and in the Azorah, and 13 places where they would bow. And we said Rav Gamliel and Rav Chananya Skanakoyin and his families would bow in a 14th place, the 14th being where the place under the chamber of the wood, under the Lishkas Eitzim, where they had a Masoda and their families, that the Aron was hidden. And that led us into a whole discussion about where the Aron was hidden and why it was hidden and what the dimensions of it were, and so on and so forth. So the Mishnah says, Halacha Beis.
Is the Gemara going to speak about why it was hidden by Lishka, by the Lishkas Eitzim, and not the right place where the Aron is kept?
No, so we actually have three opinions about it. One is that it was captured and taken to Bavel. One is that it was hidden under the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And the third is that it was hidden under the Lishkas Dira Eitzim. No, it doesn't explain why Dafka under the Lishkas Dira Eitzim. Maybe just practically speaking, that would be a place where they're less likely to find it. But no, it doesn't give any explanation like that.
Okay.
So the Mishnah says, Heichan hoyu ishtachavoy se'eru. Now we said there were 13 places where everybody would bow, aside from, again, you had the by the Lishkas Dira Eitzim, where Rav Gamliel and Rav Chananya Skanachoyim's families would bow, but everybody else would bow by 13 places. What 13 places? Arba bat Safin, v'arba bat Darim, four in the north, four in the south, Shalosh b'Mizrach, Obeis b'Mayrav, three in the east and two in the west. So in other words, and they were connected Shalosh Asasharim, they were corresponding to the 13 gates, which again, according to the Tana of our Mishnah, and as we learned in the first Mishnah of the Perek, there were 13 gates in the Azara. So the idea was, whenever a person would reach one of those gates, they would bow. So in other words, we're not saying necessarily that every person would bow every time 13 bowings in the Beis Hamikdash. If a person was walking around the Azara and coming to these gates, then altogether he would do a total of 13 bowings, one by each gate. With the idea being that this way, by bowing, he's thanking Hashem that the Beis Hamikdash was rebuilt and that it's so beautiful. So what are these 13 gates? Let's identify them. So Droimim Smuchim Amayrev. So the on the south side of the Azara, starting from the west and going down to the east. Remember that the Harabayas was on a slope. Harabayas, the mountain of the Beis Hamikdash. So it was on a slope. The ones on the west were higher, were geographically higher than the ones on the east. So therefore, it starts with the west and works its way down. So starting from the west, from the southwest corner, you have Shaar HaElyon, the upper gate, and it was called that again because it's upper, it's higher than all the other ones. Shaar HaDelek, the gate of the kindling. There's a couple of different explanations why it was called that. One is that they brought in wood for the Mizveach through there. Seeing as how the Mizveach, the ramp of the Mizveach is on the south side of the Azara, so that kind of justifies having a gate on the south side where they would bring in the wood. Yesh Omrim, that also that is where they would bring in the fire for the outer Mizveach. Like this, you had a fire on there constantly from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until Menashe Melech Yehuda, where with his Avodah Zarah he caused it to be removed, and then later on in the second Beis Hamikdash, you had a fire over there. But the idea would be that if the fire went out for whatever reason, or if they had to add more, then they would bring in fire for it through this gate. So that's another reason why it's called Shaar HaDelek. The third one is Shaar HaBechoris, the gate of the Bechoris. A Bechor is an example of Kodshim Kalim. Kodshim Kalim can be shechted anywhere in the Azara, not necessarily on the north side. Therefore, they had a gate for it on the south side of the Azara that people would bring in their Bechorim and maybe their other Kodshim Kalim as well through that gate. And the fourth one is called Shaar HaMayim, the water gate. So the Mishnah doesn't elaborate on the reasons for any of the other ones, just the water gate, because the other ones, it's relatively obvious why they were called that. But why is it called Shaar HaMayim? Shabay Machnis and Tzloiches Shal Nisu HaMayim B'chag, because on Sukkot they would bring in the pitcher of water for Nisu HaMayim, which they filled up from the Shiloyach spring, they would bring in from there. But Pashto, there's a reason why on that side, first of all, again, the water is being poured on the Mizbeach, and the ramp of the Mizbeach is on the south side of the Azara. But also, the Gichain spring or the Shiloyach or the Shiloyach pool where they brought the water from, as we discussed yesterday, was south of the Har HaBayis, because Yerushalayim, the old city of Yerushalayim, extended south of the Har HaBayis. So practically speaking, they're coming from that direction, so it justifies having a gate on that side to bring it in. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says there's a different reason it was called Shaar HaMayim. Boy HaMayim Mefakim, water is trickling out through that gate. Vasidin Lias Yertin Metachas Miftan HaBayis, in the future, in Mashiach's times, it will be coming, that stream will be coming out from under the threshold of the Heichal. We're going to learn in the Gemara at some length, the Psukim in Sefer Yechezkel describe most detailed in Sefer Yechezkel, briefly in a few other Nevi'im, it talks about a stream of water that's going to come forth from the Beis Hamikdash to the entire world, and so in the few, that's going to come out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim and trickle out from under the threshold of the Heichal. It's going to run down underneath the Heichal and then come out from, and then issue out from under its threshold and go out and turn to the right and go out through this gate. In fact, the Vilna Gaon has an explanation that what it means is even now there is a trickle of water that runs through that gate. And La'asid Lavoi, that trickle is going to be rerouted, and it's going to come out not from just any place in the Azara, but specifically from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about that stream at great length in the Gemara over here. The Bavli also talks about it in much the same words in a sugya in Yuma, which we'll learn in a few months. Okay, so anyway, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that's another reason to call this gate Shaar HaMayim. Next, Le'umosin Batsofen Smuchim L'mayrev, the gates corresponding to those on the north side of the Azara, again, starting from the west, you have Shaar Yechonia, the gate of Yechonia, which we'll explain in a minute why it was called that, Shaar HaKorban, the gate of the Korban, because they would bring in Kodesh Kodeshim through there, since Kodesh Kodeshim have to be shechted on the north side of the Azara, so they had a gate on the north side through which they would bring in such Korbanos, Shaar HaNoshim, the gate of the women. Now you have, like this, men are required to do smicha on their korbanos. It's a machloikas in a couple of places in Shas, most notably in Kiddushin, whether women are, we know that women are not chayev to be smicha on their korban, are they able to if they want? You have a machloikas, I think, between Rabbi Yossi, who says that they can, noshim smicha rishus, and I think either Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Yehuda, I don't remember, who says that they can't. So according to Rabbi Yossi, the purpose would be for the women to come in and do smicha on their korban. According to the other opinion, they would just be coming in there to watch their korban being brought. And the fourth one is called Shaar HaShir, the gate of the song. They would bring in the musical instruments for the Beis Mikdash through there. So again, three of the four names are relatively self-explanatory, but V'lama Nikrashma Shaar Yechonia, why is that upper gate on that side called Shaar Yechonia? Shabo Yotzi Yechonia B'Golusai, because Yechonia went out through that when he went into Golus, which we'll talk about a little bit in the Gemara. So his Golus was 11 years before Churban Bayis Rishon. So he went out through that gate, surrender to Nebuchadnezzar, and be taken away into jail in Bavel. So therefore, that gate was named after him, Shaar Yechonia. And in the second Beis Hamikdash, when they had a gate in that same place, then it kept that name. So far we have eight gates. Shabam Mizrach Shaar Nikanor, on the east side of the Azara, you have Shaar Nikanor, which is the famous story of Nikanor, who donated these gates, and then he was bringing them from Alexandria in a boat, and a storm blew up, and one of them was thrown overboard, and then he saved the other one by threatening that they'd have to pitch him overboard too if they wanted to throw it overboard, and then the other one was dragged along with the ship, the Derech Nes. We'll learn about it in Yuma, as the Shema talks about it in the third parak of Yuma, so we'll learn about it in a month and a half or so, as the Shema. So that's Shaar Nikanor. Ushne Pishpishin Hoyuloi, Shaar Nikanor had two small gates, Echad mi Mina ve'Echad mi Smole, one to the right, one to the left. So that brings us up so far to 11 gates, counting those two small gates as separate gates of their own. So you have 11 so far. Ushnaim b'mayrev loy hoylan shem, and then there were two gates on the west side of the Azara, which had no name, because those gates were very rarely used. So, the Mishnah in Midas tells us that the Azora was not exactly centered in the middle of the Harabayas. You had, there was more room on the south, less on the east, less on the north, and least of all room on the west. So therefore, there wasn't really that much need for a person to go in and out of the Azara on the west side. So therefore, they had gates over there, but they were small, and they didn't have a name, and people didn't use them very often. But the point is, you have 13 gates, and therefore, according to the Tana of this Mishnah, is why you had 13 places in the Beis Mikdash where you would be bowing.
In general, the setup of the Beis Hamikdash, was that Mina Shemayim, was it a Navi, or
it was Mina Shemayim? Yes, Mina Shemayim and a Navi are not really all that far apart, right? But when David is giving Shlomo the instructions to build the Beis Hamikdash, he says, "Yakol b'chsav, everything is in writing. Miyad Hashem alai hiskil, from the hand of Hashem who gave me the understanding." Meaning, yes, it was all transmitted. It was all transmitted dur achadur back to Moshe Rabbeinu about what the Beis Hamikdash should look like. So the first, so that was the first Beis Hamikdash. The second Beis Hamikdash, then the Rambam describes like this. You have Yechezkel describes in the last chapters of Sefer Yechezkel. He describes the third Beis Hamikdash, Shibonim Meher of Yamenu. There are parts of the description that are not so clear. Therefore, when they came to build the second Beis Mikdash, the Chachamim and the Neviim of that time, they couldn't build it exactly like the third Beis Mikdash. What they did is they built it mostly like the first Beis Mikdash, but including some details from the third Beis Mikdash. There's actually an explanation that's brought in some places. The idea is that the deeper reason why that happened was the blueprint that Yechezkel was talking about is meant for a Beis Mikdash that will never be destroyed. So that's going to be the third Beis Mikdash. When they came to build the second Beis Mikdash, it could have been, if they were Roy, that would have been the permanent Beis Mikdash, and that would still be standing now. Heyos, they realized that they're not worthy of it, then they realized because of that, Hashem didn't allow them to understand all the full details of that one, so therefore they built it with a little bit of the details of the third Beis Mikdash in order to remind everybody, in order to evoke by everybody, this could have been that third Beis Mikdash if we were Roy.
Okay.
But yeah, so to answer your question, the first one was built based on this blueprint that was transmitted back to Moshe Rabbeinu and then was eventually given by David to Shlomo, who you actually used it. And then the second one was built based on how the Nevi'im of that time determined based on what they understood of Yechezkel's Nevuah and what they knew of the first Beis Mikdash, and the second Beis Mikdash was built that way.
I said the second one was much bigger.
The second one was taller in particular. The ground floor of the second one was taller. The ground floor of the first Beis Mikdash was 30 amos. The ground floor of the second one was 40 amos tall. In fact, the Gemara in Bava Basra tells us that for that reason they weren't in the first Beis Mikdash. They had a wall separating the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the second Beis Mikdash because it was taller. They couldn't build a wall because it would collapse. Therefore, instead, they had to have two parechses. The total height of the building wasn't necessarily taller. The total height of the second Beis Mikdash was 100 amos. The first Beis Mikdash, it says, was 120 amos, but there's a few different ways of understanding that. Does that mean the whole building was 120 amos, or does it mean that only the ulam was 100, which is the entrance chamber of the Heichel, was 120 tall, and the rest was shorter?
But it wasn't wider, more space for holding people?
No, it wasn't wider. The dimensions, well, the dimensions of the Azara in the first Beis Mikdash, we don't know. The dimensions of the Azara in the second Beis Mikdash, we know. The Mishnayos and Middos tell us 187 by 135 Amos. Was it like that in the first Beis Mikdash? We don't know. I don't think it says.
Okay.
As far as the Heichel, as far as the Heichel itself, the Heichel in the first Beis Mikdash, Sukkim in Melachim, don't tell us the aggregate width of it. They do tell us that the room of the Heichel itself was 40 by 20, and the Kodesh HaKadoshim was 20 by 20, and that was the same dimensions they had in the second Beis Mikdash, and that's the same dimensions that will be in the third Beis Mikdash. Okay. So the Gemara begins. Masmiskin Abba Yossi ben Chanan or Yochan. Our Mishnah is specifically according to the opinion of Abba Yosef ben Yochanan, De'amah Keneged Yud Gimel Sharim. He says there were 13 gates in the Azara, and therefore that according to him, there are 13 places where you bow. Bram Kerabonon, but according to the Chachamim, who disagree with him, Shiva Sharim Hayu Ba'Azara. According to the Rabbanon, there were only seven Yetumi Azara, which you actually have a Mishnah in Midas. You actually have Mishnayos and Midas both ways. You have it early in Masechta Midas, you have in the first Perek, it mentions over there that there were seven gates in the Azara, and it goes around and names them. Some of them, the names are similar to the ones in our Mishnah, some of them, they're a little bit different. Later on, in Perek Beis of Midas, it brings the opinion of Abba Yossi ben Chanan that there were 13 gates. So therefore, so you have a Machlokes. So there's actually a Tosfos someplace, I think in Ksubos, that says it's not necessarily a Machlokes. Everybody, you know, you don't really have a Machlokes in Metzios. What it is there were 13 gates, but according to the Chachamim, six of them are less important, and therefore they don't warrant bowing when you pass by them. According to Abba Yosef and Chanan, all of them are equally important. According to the Chachamim, only seven of them are important. The other six, the two Pishpashim of Shaul Nikonor, the two small ones on the west, and one each on the north, and one each on the north and the south, are less important. Maybe they were smaller or whatever, and therefore you don't bow. So al daitan dirabon on heichan hoyu ishtachavoyis alalu. So we have to ask that according to the Chachamim, we know that there were 13 bowings. So according to them, where are these 13 bowings taking place? The answer is kiyahi de tanenan tamon, as we learn in another Mishnah in Midas. You'd gimel there about the sodig. The sodig was a low wooden fence that surrounded the Azara, or Yeshomim that it didn't surround, it was only on the east side. Whatever the case, the purpose of it was to, among other things, that Goyim and certain Tmeim are not allowed to go past it midrabanan. They actually had signs on it, which they found one of those signs in an archaeological dig some 150 years ago. They found one of those signs that was inscribed in Greek. Say they had inscriptions on them in Greek and Latin and various other popular Goyish languages warning Goyim not to go any further than this. So therefore, so the Mishnah says, you gimel protes hoyavoy, there were 13 breaches in the Soreg, 13 places where it had been broken open, sheprotsum malcha yavon, the kings of Yavon, the kings of Syria, the Syrian Greeks, when they controlled the Beis Mikdash during the years before the Nes Chanukah, they made 13 breaches in it, because since the point was that Goyim are not allowed to go past that point, they breached them in 13 places, symbolizing that no, from now on we can go wherever we want. And later on, because you have a Godrum B'nei Hashmonai, so later on the Hashmonai, when they recaptured the Beis Mikdash, fenced in those 13 places, but Gozru were connected on your Gimel Ishtachavoyis, and then they made from then on a Zera, a Tekona, that from then on you should bow in 13 places whenever you pass by one of these places that was breached and then repaired, then they should bow down to thank Hashem for the nest of saving us from the Greeks. Okay, so in other words, in short, everybody agrees that there were 13 bowings, but according to Abba Yossi ben Chanan, it's because there were 13 gates in the Azara, and according to Chachamim, it's because there were 13 breaches in the Sodik. Okay, next. Let's talk about, we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov had mentioned about the trickle, the stream of water that comes out of Shaar HaMayim, that's going to come out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, La'asid Lavoi. So let's talk in more detail about that. The pasuk says, so again, the most detailed description of it is in Yechezkel, and we're going to quote that in another minute. But there, you have also a short mention of it in Zechariah. The pasuk says, on that day, after when Mashiach comes, living water will come forth from Yerushalayim. This is it's a pasuk in the Haftarah of Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkos. So let's talk about the details. Tony, mi base Kodesh HaKadoshim ad HaParechus, it starts from the place of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, from under the Arayin, and from there until the Parechus, it's very, very thin, kakaune silai v'kilai, like the antennas of certain kinds of snails, which are very, very thin. Min Parochus ad Mizbeach HaZahav, then from the Parochus, which separates the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, until the Mizbeach HaZahav in the Kodesh, it's a tiny bit wider, Kekaunei Chagovim, then it's like the antenna of a locust, which is a little bit thicker. Min Mizbeach HaZahav ad Azores, from the Mizbeach HaZahav until the Azara, is Kechut Shel Shest, then it's a little bit wider, it's like the thickness of a thread of the Shest. When you set up a loom, you have the Shesi threads, and then you weave back and forth the Erev threads. The Shesi threads generally are thinner, the Erev threads are a little bit thicker. So now it's slightly wider, it's the width of a Shesi thread. Min Ha'azores HaMifnan HaBayis Kechut Shel Erev, then from the Azores until the threshold of the of the Heichel is like the thread of an Erev, which is slightly wider. Hagoyes Habach flips those two around, because after all, the first you have the Heichel, then you have the Azaris. Whatever the case, the point is it's gradually getting wider and wider, which when you think about it, that itself is Bederach Nes. I mean, you have rivers do get wider as they go along, but that's because water joins them. That's because other rivers join them in other places. Here you have it's one single stream of water, but it's becoming stronger and stronger and bigger as it goes further out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There are, by the way, some of the Mefoshim on the Psukim in Yechezkel that talk about that primarily, they talk about not necessarily is this meant to be an actual stream of physical water. It may be representing the outpouring of Elikus and the outpouring of knowledge of Elikus that's going to issue out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But Yeshayim, that it means an actual physical stream. And our Gemara is going according to that opinion. The Gemara in Yuma that talks about it also follows that. So mikan ve'elach, after that, after the threshold, can be pia pach. It's the size of the opening of a jug. So it's still small, but it's gotten bigger and bigger. Now it's the width of the opening of a jug. So ksiv, because it says in the pasuk in Yechezkel, where it describes the stream in some detail. So the Yechezkel describes that he sees v'hinei mayim mefakim min hakosev hayamanis. He says water is trickling forth from the right side. So this refers to the right is the south in Tanakh directions are always given in terms of somebody facing east. So therefore south is to his right. So as we said, the Shaar HaMayim, which is on the south side, he sees in his Nevuah water trickling from there. Then he continues, Betseiso Ish Kodim. Then the man went out towards the east of the Beis HaMikdash. Obviously then what it means is that the stream takes a turn from the south and starts heading towards the east. The Kavbi Yodai. He had a measuring stick in his hand. By Yomod Elephama, he measured 1,000 amas the length of the stream, and then the stream is still going. By Yavirene Bamayim, they offsoy him, and he had me walk through the water, where at that point, 1,000 amas away from the Besmikdash, the water is may offsoy him, which the Gemara interjects means ad karsula, meaning they go up to his ankles. So the water has now gotten bigger, going from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where there it was the size of the tiny antenna of a snail. Now it's big enough that when you step into it, it goes up to your ankles. Then the pasuk continues by Yomod Elef. Then he measured another 1,000 amos. By Yavirene by Mayim Meibir Koyim. He had me walk through the water again, and now it was up to my knees, meaning Ad Birchaya until the knees. By Yomod Elef, then he measured another 1,000 amos. By Yavirene Mei Mosnoyim, and he had me walk through Mei Mosnoyim, which means Ad Mosnaya. Now the water is bigger. Now it reaches all the way up to his hips. Mikan Va'elach. From then on, by Yomod Elef, then he continues, he measures another 1,000 amos. So now we're what? Now we're 4,000 amos away from the Bismith. There's two mil, about a mile and a half. And now you have it. Nachal Asher Lo Uchalaver. Now it's a stream that I couldn't cross. And because it was too deep. And the Gemara continues, even a large ship, which is easily able to navigate deep water, even a large ship wouldn't be able to cross it. My time, and why is that? Because as the Pasuk says, in Yeshaya, where it also mentions briefly about the stream, there's an expression, a mighty fleet of ships will not be able to cross it. Now, why wouldn't they be able to cross it? A large ship is used to going in deep water. The reason is because the water had swelled up. In other words, the Vart is not just that the water is deep, but the water is very, very fast flowing. So it's such a fast current that even a ship can't navigate it. And the pasuk continues, Mei Sohu. The water became Mei Sohu. So my Mei Sohu. Miloshut. It means it's too deep and too fast flowing even to swim in it. And we know that because Omer of Chuna or of Huna, the Asrin in my area, Koru l'shayota schuna, they call swimming by the word schuna. We have also a pasuk, for example, that expresses this idea. Ufeiras yodav v'kirbo, he'll stretch out his hands among themselves. It's talking about Moyov when they're going to be destroyed. They're going to stretch out their hands to daven to their getchkas or to try to save themselves or whatever. Kasher yifarash asoicha lischois, as a swimmer stretches out his hands in order to swim. So again, we see that the word sohu means to swim. So the point is, the water is going to be so big and so fast flowing that you can't even swim in it. Mahu lischois, so what's another meaning of this word, what's another meaning of this word, lischois, or not lischois, but meisachu, really, what, again, another meaning of meisachu. We just said that meisachu means water that you can't even swim in, but the Gemara gives another explanation. Amar Rav Yosi, Beit Rabbon, or Rabbivan, mayan de mismalin ba'alma. It means water that will be talked about in the world. Meaning, that, in other words, the word sachu we can also relate, besides the word schia, which means swimming, in modern Hebrew also, for example, a brechat schia is a swimming pool. But so besides that, we're saying that schia means that ne sachu means water that you can't swim in, it also means water that's talked about, meloshen sicha. So it means water that everybody is going to be talking about it and feeling it because it's so great and so powerful. Tikkun Chazitin gives two other explanations. One is, the Gemara is going to say later, the Gemara is going to say further down on the Amud, that one property of this water is that if a person is mute and unable to speak, they'll drink some of this water or they'll eat some of the fruit of the trees that grow by the banks of this river and they'll be able to speak. So therefore, in that sense, it causes, this water causes more speech to happen in the world. And then he gives a third explanation. The Medrash says, "Mitchila lahayu kilusei oila elamin amayim." Originally, Hashem's praise in the world came from the water. Kol Hashem alamoy. Later on, Hashem created a world, and you have many different things in the world that praise Hashem. In fact, the Medrash goes on to say this is one reason why, when the people were acting badly in the years before the Mabul, why the Eved should decide to bring a marble of water, why daft the water of all things, the idea being then the world will be like it was originally. It's covered with water, and the praise of Hashem comes forth from that water. So eventually then the marble was over, and then the land dried up, the earth dried up, and people are able to start repopulating it. But now the idea is also that this water is going to have greater kedusha than any other water in the world, and therefore more than any place else in the world, it will be singing Hashem's praises. So that's the third explanation of what it means, mayan de mismalin ba'alma, means the water that more than any other water in the world is going to be speaking and singing the praises of Hashem. Okay. More on that, more about that river, Ksiv, the Pasuk describes also in Zechariah, Bayomahu, on that day, Yamoko Niftach, there will be an open fountainhead. In other words, again, there's going to be this fountain, there's going to be this stream that's going to come forth from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Leves David Ula Yoshvi Yerushalayim, for the house of David and for the inhabitants of Yerushalayim, L'chatas Ula Nida, it will be available for Chatas, meaning, the Gemara is going to explain, it means for Mei Chatas, for Adam water, Ula Nida, and for Nida to Tovelin. So why are we mentioning specifically Beis David and Yoshvi Yerushalayim? On the face of it, the rest of the Jewish people are going to be able to make use of it as well. So Reb Shmuel ben Nachman, Meshem Reb Nosson, or Reb Yonasan, what it means is me Beis David v'ad Yoshvi Yerushalayim, the part of the stream from David HaMelech's palace, from Moshiach's palace, until where everyone else in Yerushalayim lives, the king's palace was right next to the Beis Mikdash. So you have the Beis Mikdash is at the highest point above the city of Yerushalayim. Then you have right below it as the palace, and then below it you have everybody else's houses. So the part of the stream from Beis David until Yoshvi Yerushalayim, Kshedim L'Nidor L'Chathas. It will be kosher for Nida to Tovelin as well as to use for Mechathos for Paradrum water. Mikan ve'elach, but after that, Meitaruvasein, after that it gets mixed in with other water because you have different other streams that join it. You have rainwater that joins it. So therefore, so Meitaruvasein, so it's mixed water, Kshedim l'Nida, there's still kosher for a Nida to Tovelin because a Nida doesn't daft have to Tovel in Maim Chaim. There's a machlokas who's showing him whether a zava does. Everybody agrees a nida just has to tovel on a regular mikvah. A zava, everybody, so a nida, everybody agrees has to tovel on a regular mikvah. A zava, everybody agrees has to tovel on mayim chaim. A zava, it's a machlokas, although the accepted halacha is that she doesn't. She can tovel on a regular mikvah like a nida. So after that, it's still kosher for a nida, but upsulim the mechatas, but it's possible for mechatas, for part of adam water, because for that you have to have stream water that's not mixed in with anything else. So therefore, that's why the pasuk is specifying leves David or Yoshvi Yerushalayim in order to mark out the part of this stream, which is going to be kosher for both of these purposes. Omer Abulazar or a Meir Omer, we base David Vad Yeshua Shalim Shredim Lenido Lachatas a little bit differently. Again, from base David, from the palace of David until where everybody else in Yerushalayim lives, Shredim Lenido Lachatas, that part is going to be pure spring water, so therefore it'll be kosher for Nida and for Chatas, Mikan Ve'elach. But after that, Nekatafrisasim. After that, it starts going down a steep slope, and therefore, Psulin, the Nidor Lachatas, therefore, they will be possible for a Nida to Tovel in as well, because when you have flowing water, now you have like this, a Mayon, a spring, is Mataher when it's flowing, unlike a Mikveh. However, you still have to have enough water in one place for the person to Tovel in, so here the point is, it's going to be fast flowing, it's going to be going down a steep slope. Therefore, even if it's pure spring water, you're not going to be able to tovel in it because you don't have enough of it in one place. And if, like the previous opinion, if like Shmuel Bar Nachman, on top of that, it's mixed in with rainwater or with other sources of water, then all the more so, it's going to be possible when it's kataphras, when it's on a slope, it's going to have to be gathered together in one place in order to be able to tovel in. By the way, the psukim in Zechariah and in some other places talk about the idea that La'osid Lava, Yerushalayim is going to be much higher than the surrounding area. Like this, you have Yerushalayim Harim Saviv La. Yerushalayim is surrounded by mountains, as it says in the pasuk in Tehillim. But La'osid Lava, the pasuk describes how the entire Yerushalayim is going to be lifted up and be high on a mountain, and everything else around it is going to be flat. So therefore, you really do have a very steep slope coming down from Yerushalayim to everywhere else, so which also explains like what we said before, that this current is going to be very fast flowing, and therefore, for that reason, it's going to be a kataphras, and therefore, it's going to be a slope, and therefore, it's possible to tovel in. Or, Korban Eidah says, another explanation, again, that maybe the Nida over here means a Zavah, who needs specifically Mayim Chaim, and again, therefore, by now, it's not Mayim Chaim, because by that point, past Yerushalayim, it's mixed in with other water. It's mixed in with rainwater or other sources of water. Okay. Next, Ksiv, the pasuk continues to describe in Yechezkel, describing the stream, by Yomer Eli, the Malach was guiding me and showing me, he says it to me, Hamayma Eli Yotzim, the whole pasuk goes that he's describing different places. The stream at some point beyond Yerushalayim is going to divide up into various streams that are going to go in different directions. So he tells me, "Hamayim Eile Yotzim Ela Galila Hakadmona." This water is going to go to the eastern Galil. That means the Gemara interjects, "Zeyam Shal Samchu Usivucha." This refers to the lake of Samchu. Nowadays, that lake is called the Chula. It's a small lake a few miles north of the Kinneret. Nowadays, most of it was dried up, and they use the area for agricultural land. It's one of the richest agricultural areas in Eretz Yisrael. But in those times, it was a larger lake, and therefore, the pasuk is saying that the water of the stream is going to reach that lake and improve the quality of the water there. Then the pasuk continues, V'yodu el ha'arava. The water will go down to the arava. So the Gemara interjects, Zeyam shal Tveria. That means the Kinneret. So the water is going to go into there. This water that ultimately comes forth from the Mizmikdash. Uva'u ha'yama. The pasuk continues, they will come to the sea. So Zeyam ha'melach. This means that this water will reach the Yam ha'melach. El ha'yama ha'mutsoim. And then it continues that it will go until the water which is mutsoim. Zeh ha'yam ha'gadol. That refers to the Yam ha'gadol. Which means so either the Korban Eidah understands that the Yam ha'gadol to mean the Mediterranean, the Korban Eidah and Tikvah Chadash can explain it to mean the Mediterranean. There are other Mephoshim who explain that it means actually the Atlantic Ocean. So the water is going to reach that, and each of those places is going to improve the quality of the water, which we'll get back to that in a few lines, but first the Gemara digresses a second. Why is the Yam ha'gadol of Lama Nikashmei Mutsoim? Why is the Mediterranean called Yama HaMutsoim? So it means Keneged Shtei Pa'amim Sheyotza, because there were two times when it went forth beyond its boundaries. Echad v'der Enosh v'dech v'echad v'der Haflaga. One in the time of Enosh, when they started worshiping Avodah Zarah, so the Eibush to punish them with a mini mabul that caused part of the Mediterranean to flood. In other words, apparently the idea is before that happened, the lake bed, what's now the seabed of the Mediterranean, was dry land. But now, as a result of Dur Enosh, part of it was flooded, and then by the Dur HaFloga, another part of it was flooded. So therefore, because of that, the Mediterranean is called Hayom HaMutsoyim, the water that went out beyond the boundaries where it was supposed to, which the Eibishter had arranged boundaries for the waters to begin with, but now the Eibishter told that water to go and burst through those boundaries and flood these areas. So how far did it get each time? Rav Elazar b'shem Rav Chanina, b'rishona yotza ad Calabria. The first time the water burst through and started flooding the Mediterranean down to the coast of Calabria. Calabria is, we know now, is the nowadays we're familiar with it. It's the toe of Italy. You know, Italy is shaped like a boot. Calabria is the toe area of it, and that is actually where we get our Asrogim from, the famous Yanava Asrogim. They're called Yanava because they used to be shipped through Genoa in the north of Italy, but they actually come from Calabria in the south of Italy. So the first time, in other words, the water flooded what's now the northern half of the Mediterranean until Calabria. Or Vashnia Yotzad Kefe Barbaria, the second time it went all the way until the coast of Barbaria, which is North Africa. The natives in the north of Africa are called Berbers, so I guess that's why the place is called Barbaria. Anyway, so the point is, the first time in Dur Enosh, the north half of the Mediterranean was flooded, according to him, and then in Dur HaFloga, the second half. Rav Acha b'shem Rav Chanina. Rav Acha says in the name of Rav Chanina differently, but Rishonu Yotzad Kefe Barbaria, the first time it flooded from, according to him, it flooded from west to east. So the first time it flooded from the entrance of the Mediterranean, from the Strait of Gibraltar, until the coast of Barbaria, which again is North Africa, particularly Tunisia, that area. And the second time it went all the way until Akko and Yafo, which are cities on the coast of Eretz Yisrael. So according to him, first in the time of Enosh, it was the western half that was flooded, and then later on in the time of the Dur HaFloga, it was the eastern part that was flooded, all the way until the coast of Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, we have a pasuk that expresses that idea. You have a pasuk in Sefer Iyov where Hashem is explaining to Iyov that you as a human being can't possibly understand how I run the world. One of them is, Hashem says, that I make sure that the seas don't flood beyond where they're supposed to. And Hashem uses the expression that I told the sea, the expression of the pasuk is, ad until here you should come, don't go any further. Here you will have the mightiness of your waves. So the Gemara is dashing. When it says ad poi tove veloisoisif, means ad akoi tove veloisoisif, means Hashem told the water, go only as far as akoi, don't go beyond that. We get that because the word poi, we're dashing in the word poi means here. Another word in Tanakh for here is koi, so therefore that associates with the name akoi. So Hashem is, so to speak, telling us that Hashem says, only until Akoi may you, the water, go. Don't go any further beyond that. And when it says, Ufoi Yoshis, we're going Galacha, here there will be placed the mightiness of your waves, meaning Poi, we're Darshaning, as related to the name Yafo, Ad Yafo, Oshis, going Galacha, only until Yafo, which nowadays you have Tel Aviv Yafo, which is also on the coast of Eretz Yisrael, until there is where the mightiness of your waves will go, but not beyond that. So in other words, the point is, So according to both of these opinions, the Mediterranean used to be dry land and then became flooded. Because of that, it's called Yom HaMutsoyim, the water that went out from where it was supposed to be. There's an interesting halacha point that comes out of this, by the way. The Gemara tells us in Brachos that if you see the Yam HaGadol, you're supposed to make a bracha, Baruch She'osah as a Yam HaGadol. And then you also have that it says that when you see oceans that are there since Sheshes Yimei Bereshis, you're supposed to say Baruch, you're supposed to say Baruch Atah Hashem, Oisem Ma'ase Bereshis. So the question is, what is Yam HaGadol in this connection? Again, does it mean the Mediterranean or does it mean the Atlantic? So there's an interesting truva in the Sefer B'Tzela Chochma where he discusses, based on our Gemara, he says, apparently, you should not be able to say Oysa Ma'asa Bereshis on the Mediterranean, because we're saying in our Gemara over here that the Mediterranean didn't exist at the time of Ma'asa Bereshis. It came into existence only later, in the time of Enosh, in the time of the Dur HaFloga. Therefore, necessarily, it must be that when you say Oysa Ma'asa Bereshis would be when you see the ocean, and then when you see the Mediterranean, fine, you have a special bracha for that, Sha'asa. That's a Yamagodl.
Okay.
So the Gemara asks, Now, we said that the stream that Yechezkel describes is going to four different bodies of water. The Yam Shel Samchu, the Chula Lake, north of the Kinneret itself, the Dead Sea, and the Mediterranean. So, Nicha Yama Rabba V'Yama D'Milcha, we understand why the water of the stream has to go into the Big Sea, into the Mediterranean, and into the Salt Sea, the Dead Sea, B'Shvil HaMitkan, because it needs to sweeten it. Those are salt water nowadays. The effect of the stream of water is going to be to sweeten them and turn them into fresh water. But Yama de Tveria, Yama de Samchu, but why does it need to go to the Kinneret and to the Chula? Both of those are already freshwater lakes. The answer is L'Rabbis de Gossam. You're right, it's not needed in order to freshen up the water. The water in those seas is already fresh water, but in order to increase the number of fish that are going to live in those waters. Like this you have, there are fish that live in the Chula, and the part of it that still exists as a lake. There are fish that live in the Kinneret, but now the result of this water that comes there from the Beis Mikdash is going to be that there's going to be many more kinds of fish that can live there. D'chtibbe, as the pasuk continues, in those psukim in Yechezkel, L'mina tir d'gossam, the fish will be according to their kinds, meaning L'mine minin tir d'gossam, there's going to be many, many different types of fish that are going to live in those waters. And even nowadays, the Gemara says, there are some bodies of water where you have that even now where there are many different kinds of fish able to live. Tani, Omer of Shimon Amil, Maisa Shalachti LaTzidon, I once went to Tzidon, which Tzidon could be Tzidon on the coast of the Mediterranean, or it could be there's a place called Tzida on the shore of the Kinneret, whatever it is. One time Rav Shimon Amil says I went there. They brought me over 300 different kinds of fish in one platter. So we see that even nowadays you have some places where a tremendous number of different kinds of fish grow, and La'asid Lava, there's going to be even more as a result of the stream. Okay. Next, the Pasuk describes, continuing the Pesukim in Yechezkel, it says that once the water of the stream reaches these bodies of water, then v'nirpu hamoyim, then it says the waters will be cured, they won't be salty anymore. But then the Pasuk continues, b'tsoisov ugvav, its swamps and its puddles of water, v'lo yerafu, they will not be healed, l'melach nitanu, they are set aside for salt. Now, the simple meaning of the Pasuk, Mephoshimach and the Pasuk explains that the Pasuk is saying like this, if all the bodies of water in the world are turned to fresh water, then where are we going to get salt from? And after all, you need salt. So the answer is going to be that there's still going to be these swamps and pools and things like that, which are not going to be touched by the water of the stream, and those will remain salty, and therefore they can get salt from there. But the Gemara is bothered by that explanation. The Pasuk is saying the water will be cured, and I'm implying all the water in the world. So then you're saying that some water is not going to be healed. So what it means is, the Gemara says, Mokam hu ushmoi v'lo yerofu. It doesn't mean that it won't be healed. The Pasuk is telling us, the Lo Yerofu, there's a place called Lo Yerofu, where even there, what you would think, maybe it's called the Lo Yerofu, because like up until now, everybody figured there's no way of ever curing the water over there and make it sweet. Nevertheless, even that will be affected by this water, and the water there will become sweet. There's a different explanation. Also, the Reb Shlomo Cirilio, in his Pirush, explains that what it means is, he learns it a little differently, there's a place called Yerofu, in that place, the swamps and whatever in that place will not be healed, because in those places they're going to use those as places to get salt. But everything else in the world is going to be cured and be fresh water. The pasuk continues there in Yechezkel, Ksiv, Ba'alam Nachal Yala Al Sfase Mizeo Mizeo Kol Eitz Machal, next to the stream, on both sides, there are going to grow all kinds of fruit trees, Lo Yibo Lalehu, their leaves will never fall off, V'lo Yita Imperiei, their fruit will never cease to be produced, Lo Chadoshav Yevaker, it will keep on producing new fruit, Lo Chadoshav. So what does Lo Chadoshav mean? Literally, Lo Chadoshav means by its month. So what do we mean by that? Tony, we learn in a Braisa, Amar of Yehuda, in this world, nowadays, before Mashiach comes, it takes 6 months for grain to grow. Because, for example, wheat, you plant it around Tishrei Cheshvan time, and it's not ready until Nisan Iyo time. The Ilan Oysa L'Shnei Masa Chodesh, and trees take 12 months to produce fruit. In the future world, the Mashiach's times, the grain will grow in 1 month, the Ilan Oysa L'Shnei Chodeshim, and trees will grow new fruit every 2 months. My timer, l'chadosh shav yivakir, because the pasuk says, in its months, plural, month meaning 2 months, it will produce new fruit. So every 2 months, there'll be new fruit on the tree. Amr Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi learns differently. Again, nowadays it takes 6 months for grain and 12 months, twice as long, for fruit trees. But he says the amounts are going to be half the time that Rabbi Yehuda is saying. Grain will grow within 15 days, and trees will grow fruit every month. So in other words, they agree. The proportion is still going to be kept. Trees are going to take twice as long as grain. But instead of Rabbi Yehuda's 1 month and 2 months, Rabbi Yossi is making it half a month and 1 month. Why? Shaken Matsinu. Where do we have a precedent that grain can grow in 15 days? Shaken Matsinu. We find that in Yoel's times, the grain grew in 15 days. And they were able to bring the Oimer from it. My timer, where do we see that in the Pasuk? The Pasuk says, Yoel tells the people, people of Sion, rejoice and be happy in Hashem, your God. He gave you the murder, which is the early rain that falls in Eretz Yisrael, like we say in Krishma, Yoda Nasati Matara Tzachamita, Yoda Umalkush, Yoda and Moda is the same thing. So Hashem gave you the Moda with tzedakah, as a special bonus. By Yoda Lachem Geshem Moda Umalkush tradition, he made fall for you rain, the Moda and the Malkush, which is the late rain, in the first month. Meaning, so the Gemara tells us, the Bavli tells us in Tainus, the story, in Yoel's times there was a terrible famine that lasted for several years. Eventually the Jewish people did Tshuva, and Hashem caused the famine to stop. So now it was already Nissan time. Yoel told the people, go plant whatever grain you have left. And they did. The upshot of it was that the grain grew in only a few days, even though usually, as we're saying in our Gemara, it takes 6 months for grain to grow. Here a Nes happened. The necessary rains fell in Nisan, the Moda early in Nisan, the Malkush later in Nisan, and the whole grain grew within 15 days. Our Gemara is saying 15 days. The Bavli over there in Tainus actually says it was 11 days, because by the time they planted it, was the fourth or fifth of Nisan. And then it all grew, and it was already, by the time this came, the 16th of Nisan, that they had to harvest some of that barley for the Omer. So we see, in other words, Rabbi Yossi is saying, you see that at that time, grain grew in 15 days, therefore, La'asid Lava, it can also be in 15 days. So how does Rabbi Yossi understand the word l'chadosh shav, which on the face of it, like Rabbi Yehuda said, means 2 months? He says b'chol chodesh v'chodesh yemavaker. Means doesn't mean l'chadosh shav in 2 months. It means in its months, meaning every month throughout the year, these trees that are growing by the stream are going to be producing fruit. Okay. The pasuk continues v'olehu l'srufa. The pasuk continues, the leaves of these trees will also be beneficial. They'll be for trufa. So what does that mean? Rabbi Yochanan Omar, terpe makes its olive teref mezoina. It's a little bit hard to understand what these words mean, and the Mefarshim have a few different explanations. Korban Eda explains that tarpe makes its ole, means the food of it. Tarpe, we're darshaning the word teref, tarpe, as if it had a tes, which therefore means food, like hatrifeni lechem chuki. So it means it means that the fruit matzitz will stick out more than ale, more than its leaves. In other words, the fruit will be more visible than the leaves. Not like nowadays, you have a fruit tree, you often have the fruits are hidden under the leaves. Here, these trees will produce so much fruit, and such big fruit, that it'll be easily visible among the leaves. And then the Gemara is asking, the teref mezoina is, how does the word teref come to mean mazain? So that's one explanation. Korban Eda says a second explanation, that it means, usually nowadays, when a tree grows, first it produces leaves, and only months later do you have fruit. Here, it's not going to be like that. Here, the fruit is going to be produced as soon as the leaves start coming out. And since the leaves are never going to fall off it, as the pasuk says, then it means it's always going to be producing the fruit. Tiklun Chavitin explains it somewhat similarly to the first explanation, that the word terfe means trufa, that it means food. So it means, in other words, that there's going to be, that the leaves are going to be usable as food, and then explaining, so how is it going to be used as food? You're going to be able to suck out from the leaf, and you're going to get food. You're going to get nourishment from the leaves themselves. There's a couple of other explanations. One of them being that the word over here in the Gemara is terapia, which is like the word therapy in English. It means a cure. It means that these leaves are going to have curative powers. They're going to have medicinal powers. So the Gemara continues, Rav or Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel argue exactly what are these leaves going to do, what's going to be the cure that they accomplish. Chad Omer Lahater Peshel Amaylon. One says that it means to open up the upper mouth. In other words, like we said before in the Gemara, if a person is mute, then now they're going to be able to speak. The Aruch gives another explanation, which the Tiklun Chazdin brings. It means that it's going to open up a person's mouth. A person is going to have a taiva for this food. The other one says it means to open up the mouth below, meaning, in other words, that if a woman is infertile, then it'll make her that she's fertile and able to have children. Or the other explanation, it means if a person is constipated, then it'll help loosen them up. Okay. So those are the properties of the stream that's going to come forth from the Kodesh HaKadosh. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Ulo Masin Bat Safin Kula, we said there were the north gates on the side, on the north side of the Azara, and one of them was, we said, Shau Yechonya. So let's talk a little bit about Yechonya's Golos. Also, Tiklun Chazdin explains, since we mentioned the 13 breaches that Malcha Yovan did, which has a little bit to do with the Churban, there wasn't a total Churban, but still, they created a certain amount of Churban in the Bais Mikdash. So let's also talk a little bit about the Churban. So at Moitzeh, you find the story was as follows. B'shar she'olah Nebuchadnezzar l'kan, when Nebuchadnezzar came to here to Eretz Yisrael, Bava Yashav lo b'dof nishal Antiochia. He didn't come all the way to Yerushalayim. He was sitting and waiting in Dofni of Antiochia. It's a place, the Torah calls it Rivla. It's on the northeastern border of Eretz Yisrael. Nowadays, it's someplace in Syria. So Nebuchadnezzar made that his headquarters. The Yotze Sanhedrin Gdola across. So the Sanhedrin Gdola came to talk to Nebuchadnezzar. But Omra Loyan, they asked him, Gias Mana Baises Ali Chorib, is it time for this house to be destroyed? In other words, are you coming to destroy the Beis Hamikdash? Omalani says no, but Oise Shem Lachi Alechem, that king Yechonia, which I crowned over you, Tnuhu Liv Ani Hoylech, give him to me, and I'm willing to leave. In other words, what happened was, you had Yechonia's father Yehoyakim had been the king for 11 years. He rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, so Nebuchadnezzar invaded Eretz Yisrael and took Yehoyakim prisoner. And on his way to Babel, he died. Then Nebuchadnezzar appointed Yehoyakim's son Yechonia or Yehoyachin as the next king. And the Medrash, this piece that we have over here in the Gemara, is also in a Medrash in Vayikra Rabba. The Medrash says that when Nebuchadnezzar came back home, his advisors told him, that's a really stupid idea. If the father rebelled against you, what makes you think the son is going to be any more loyal? So Nebuchadnezzar listened to them, and he came back, and now he's saying he wants Yechonia to surrender, and then he'll spare the city and the Beis Mikdash. So Bov Omri Yehoyachin Melech Yehuda. So they came and told Yehoyachin, the king of Yehuda, Nebuchadnezzar Boiloch, Nebuchadnezzar wants you. So the Medrash over there in Vayikra Rabba tells a whole discussion that he had with them about is it right that you're going to force me to surrender to him in order to save all of you, and they eventually convinced him it's the right thing. So Kivin Shoshama Mehen Kach. So he heard what's going on, that he's going to have to go into Golus. Not a Mafteches Shal Beis Hamikdash. He took the keys of the Beis Hamikdash, Olo LeGagel Shal Heichel, and he went up to the roof of the Heichel. Amar Lefan of Ribbono Shel Olam L'Sha'ava Hayinu Ne'emanim Lach. Ribbono Shel Olam, we used to be faithful to you, your keys to the Beis Mikdash were able to be in our hands, and we were able to guard them properly. Now that we're not trustworthy, then we're giving your keys back to you, you'll take better care of them than we did. So the Gemara says, what happened? Train Amaroyin. True Amaroyim argue what happened. Chad Amar Zorkan V'Oid Lo Yodu. One says he threw them up to Shemayim, and they never came back down, because in fact they were taken up in Shemayim. V'Chad Amar, the other one says even more than that, Bok Min Yad, of an image of a hand came out, Min HaShemayim, Unatolata Niyode, and took it from his hand. So whatever the case, yes, the keys were surrendered to Shemayim. Because in other words, it showed, either way, Hashem was showing with that you know what, Yechonia, you're right. I don't like the Avodah. The people are doing too many Avodas, and I don't like the Avodah, and therefore, yes, the keys might as well be back in my hands rather than in your hands where you're acting badly and yet continuing to do the Avodah.
Was Yechonia a good king did he go on Hashem's ways, or he? Because
the pasuk describes on him that he was one of the kings. Vayas harab be'enei Hashem. But we see from this Gemara that when he was told he had to go into Golos, we see he did a certain degree of tshuva. Later on, also the Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin he ended up doing total tshuva in jail. And he ended the whole story over there, which actually the Medrash there in Vayikra Abba tells it also, how they sent his wife down to him in jail, and then she told him she's Nida, so he stayed away from her. Eventually, he had the schust that from him came Zerubbabel, from him came, his grandson was Zerubbabel, who was the leader of the Jewish people at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, and eventually Mashiach is going to be descended from him. But yes, so at the beginning he was a Rosha, but afterwards we see that he did Shuvah. So the Gemara continues, Kivin Shiro Kol Chore Yehuda Kane. Once all the nobles of Yehuda saw what's going on, they saw that Hashem doesn't like the Avoda anymore because he took back the keys, and they saw that the king himself is faint-hearted and he's ready to surrender. They went up to their respective roofs and they fell down and died out of such tzar. Hadohu dichtiv. Thus, we find in the pasuk expressing what happened over here, where people fell down and died at the time of the churban. This is actually 11 years before the churban, but still in connection with the churban, that people were on their roofs and fell off and died. Dichtiv. You have a pasuk in Yeshaya. Masa Gechizoyin, the burden of Nevuah about Gechizoyin, the valley of Nevuah, which means Yerushalayim, where most of the Nevi'im spoke about it. Maloch Eifakiel, this Kulech Lagagas, what is it, what's going on with you that you've all gone up to the roofs? Chuais Malaya, you used to be the city that was full of shouting. Irhaimiyah, the noisy city, etc. So we see, in other words, that the Navi is saying, with Ruach HaKodesh, with Nevuah, that one day there's going to come a point where this happy, joyful city is going to be a scene where people are falling off roofs because of tzar. Mishnah says, Yud Gimel Shulchanes Hayu B'Mikdash. There were 13 tables in different places in this Mikdash. Ches Shal Shayish B'Beis HaMikdashayim. There were 8 tables made out of marble in the Beis HaMikdashayim. Shalein Medichin HaSekravayim. That is where they would wash the kishkas of the animal. And the reason why they were made of marble is because marble has the property of keeping things on it cool. If they made it out of metal, then they would heat up, and then it would cause the kishkas to spoil. So they had them, they were made out of marble. So that's 8. Obeys the might of a kevesh. Then he had 2 on the west side of the ramp of the Mizbeach. Echad shol shayish ve'echad shol kesef. One, again, made out of marble, and the other one made out of silver. Al shol shayish noisin ha'sevorim. The marble one, they would place on it the evorim of the korban before they brought it up to the basement, before they brought it up to the mizbeach. Again, the same idea, the marble will help keep it cool. The echad shokibal shok kesef, clay sharis, and then on the silver one, they would put the clay sharis. Every morning when they would open the basmithash for the day's avoda, they would take out 93 kalim, and that was going to be used for the day's avoda, and they would arrange them on this table, and the kohen would come and take them from this table as they needed them. So that one was made out of silver. So the Gemara says, Rav Achi v'Rav Yashe, or Moti b'Shem Rav Shmuel b'Rav Yitzchok, or Rav Yosi b'Shem Rav Shmuel b'Rav Yitzchok, but Rav Chananya Moti b'Rav Chananya says instead that it was b'Shem Rav Yechanan, less kan shal kesef. There's nothing over here when we said in the mid, I skipped a couple of lines. Ubeiz v'olam mibachutz mibifnim. Then, so far we have 10 tables, 8 in the basement of B'chaim, 2 near the Kevesh. Then we have Ubeiz v'olam. Then we have 2 inside the Ulam. Inside the mechutz and the fnim, really, it's supposed to be on the inside, right inside the door of the ulam, the entryway to the heichel, al pesach habayis by the door of the house of the building, echad shoshayish ve'echad shazav, one made out of marble, the other one made out of gold, al shoshayish noisim lacham upon him v'knisasay, they placed lacham upon him on the marble one when they first brought it in. Every week when they're going to change lacham upon him, they would bring the new lacham upon him and put it for a while on this marble table. And again, the idea was, the reason it had to be marble was again so the lacham upon him doesn't get heated up and spoil. And then they had another golden one to put it on when they're taking it out before they distribute it to the Kohenim. And the reason why that one had to be gold, because you go up in Kedusha, you don't go down. So once the Lacham upon him had been all week on the Shulchan, which was plated with gold, then they had to again place it on a golden table. They couldn't downgrade and place it on a table of any other material. So far that's 12 tables. And the 13th, Echon Shal Zahav Mufnim, and then the 13th one is made out of gold. Inside the Hechel, Shal of Lachem Aponim Tamid, the Lachem Aponim is always on that table. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tony, we learn in a Braisa, Al Shal Kesef. That we learn in a Braisa that the first one for the Lachem Aponim was not made out of marble, it was made out of silver. But Rab Achivir Miyashe, or Motu Moshe Meshmo Barav Yitzchak, or Rab Yossi B'Shem of Shmo Barav Yitzchak, and Rab Hananya Motibo, Rab Hananya thinks to say that it was B'Shem Rab Yechanan. No, less Tan Shal Kesef. It's not correct to say that it was silver. The Brisa may say that, but don't think that the Mishnah needs to be corrected in order to fit that Brisa. No, the Mishnah is correct that it was made out of marble because silver, being a metal, will conduct heat. It'll cause the bread will be hot, and if it's hot, it's more likely to spoil. It's more likely to get moldy. There are different geosoids over here. One of them being Tikkun Chadatin has the other way around. Fakir, that. Why does the Braisa insist, therefore, that the table was made out of marble? The reason is because, again, marble helps keep things cold, but the Mishnah doesn't want that. The Mishnah, Fakir, wants it to be made out of silver because the Lachem Aponim was supposed to stay hot. So the question is, why do they need to have the table made of a particular material so that the Lachem Aponim doesn't spoil or so it doesn't cool off? Doesn't it say this is one of the nisim that took place in the Mishmikdash? When they put the Lachem Aponim down, it was hot and fresh. And when they took it off a week later, it was also still hot. As the Pasuk says, to place hot bread on the day it's taken, meaning when it was placed and when it was taken off the Shulchan, it was still just as hot, so it was a dead, it was mice and nissim anyway. So why do they need particularly a table of marble in order to keep it from spoiling, or a table of silver in order to keep it hot? The answer is Rabbi Shrub and Levi Omer ain't muskid and mice and nissim. You're not allowed to. You can't mention mice and nissim. In other words, you can't rely in somechan on a nest. In other words, yes, there was a nest, but you can't rely on that. You have to make the effort possible to make sure it doesn't spoil, and then Eibishter will do the rest. So they have to make sure, therefore, that the table is made out of an appropriate material that it won't heat up the bread and make it moldy, or the other way around, that it wouldn't cool off the bread. The rest is in the Eibishter's hands. Okay. And the Gemara says, Bowen Kumi Reb Levi, or Reb Ila, Loi HaYisham Lechem. Now we have like this. The Lechem Aponim was replaced on the Shulchan every Shabbos. What happens if one Shabbos they don't have new Lechem Aponim? Mahu La'anicha, the Shabbos Abba, are we allowed to leave the old Lechem Aponim on the Shulchan until next Shabbos? Or does it become possible by Lina? Usually you have most things that are in a klisharis become possible in Lina overnight. Here you have the Lachem Aponim as a special thing. It stays on the Shulchan all week long from Shabbos to Shabbos and it doesn't become possible. But the question is now, is it going to become possible because it wasn't taken off the Shulchan on Shabbos, or is it still going to stay kosher and we can leave it on the Lachem Aponim and we can leave it on the Shulchan for another week? Amaloy, instead of Levi or of Ila, answered them, Ksivna Sata ala Shulchan Lechem Ponim Lefonai Tomid. The Pasuk says you should place on the Shulchan in front of me Lechem Ponim in front of me constantly, meaning Lechem Ponim, I feel the Pasul. So yes, even if the Lechem Ponim is Pasul, you still have to leave it over there. There are Gersois over here that take out the word Pasul, and they explain, the Gemara is saying it won't be Pasul. As long as it's on the Shulchan, it will stay kosher, and therefore you can leave it there for many weeks as much as necessary. Which is the halacha, by the way, that Amam Paskins it that way. That even as long as it was placed there on Shabbos and not on any other day of the week, then it can stay there as long as necessary. And therefore, yeah, if you have no new lechem upon him, then you're able to leave it there another week. Okay. We'll continue tomorrow, Best Hashem. We're going to talk about the position of the Shulchan and the Menorah in the Beis Mikdash. Best Hashem.
Thank you very much. Have a